Hey guys, this is Ishai Breslauer and welcome to the CRE Shark Eye Show, where we discuss commercial real estate. On Mondays, we dive deep into an asset class, and on Thursdays, we go into some inspirational stories for the weekend. Can't wait to start. Let's go. Hey guys, before we continue, I would like to introduce you to the 7-Day CRE Challenge, which will introduce you to commercial real estate and will show you that anyone can do this. Also, I have the free cheat sheet for commercial real estate with the 6 best secrets for commercial real estate. You can download it free. Just click below or above, wherever it is, and get it. Let's continue. Hey guys, how are you? Ishai Breslauer, your host of the CRE Shark Eye Show, where we discuss commercial real estate. Today we have Jamie Stadmauer. And it's a privilege. I'll tell you why. First of all, Jamie, thank you for being with us. I appreciate your time.
Of course.
And I'll tell you guys why Jamie is so interesting and why he's so, meaning for a while I wanted a guy who is not necessarily the owner of the business or stuff like that. But, you know, in commercial real estate, you have movers and shakers within companies that make things happen. And Jamie is exactly that. And with his very, very interesting career path, there's a lot to learn from and a lot to discuss because he's in the front end of acquisitions. Let's start with that. But before we get to that, we'll discuss his career and how he started and all these interesting things, all these beautiful nuggets that he has to give us. But beforehand, Jamie, if you could please introduce yourself a little bit, tell us what you do today.
So my name is Jamie Stadmauer, and like you mentioned, I've been in real estate for a while. What I do today is I'm with a company called Agora, and we basically do investment management software. So we try to help real estate GPs who have lots of investors, and you know, many of these companies still use spreadsheets and you know, individual emails, you know, a lot of manual ways of keeping track and communicating with them. And we, you know, our software is there to basically help that process along, make it more efficient for the, GPs, and give the investors a better overall experience. So hopefully they continue to want to invest with you.
So first of all, it sounds really interesting. We're going to dig into that soon. But you know what? Beforehand, let me just make my phone, keep my phone quiet for a second. But here's what I want. I want to hear how you got into this. How'd you get into this world of commercial real estate?
So it's actually an interesting story. When I was in college, like many, I had no clue what I wanted to do. I mean, I was in, I went to Cy Sims, a business school, and I really didn't know what path I wanted to go. So I ended up majoring in MIS, which is like computers. And I figured no matter what I just end up doing, it's going to be a valuable tool. And what I ended up doing is I like any good college kid, I went to go get a summer internship. And during this internship, you know, the internship was for computers, MIS, but it was for a real estate company. And what they did is every single Thursday, they had a property management meeting, 7:30 a.m. The whole company came, a huge meeting. And they would rotate each week. You would have a different property manager presenting his properties, you know, from nuts to bolts, the physical, the accounting, every aspect of it. And part of what the summer internship program was is that every intern, no matter what department you're in, was in these property manager meetings. So for me, like I said, I happened to have been in a real estate company. I didn't know what I wanted to do. And as soon as I started seeing these presentations and learning about real estate, and you know, I really just fell in love with it. And that was the beginning. And from there, I've been touching real estate for the past almost 20 years.
That's amazing. And this was Kushner, right?
Yeah, this is Kushner.
So that's amazing to get into as an intern to a big company, to have this experience of having this roundtable experience of having... Everyone has to present actually what they do and what type of properties, what type of processes they are actually running, and having even interns being able to express themselves. I think this is outstanding. What a beautiful culture. And so tell us, that was actually property management, right? This was, it was not acquisitions. How did you get into the acquisitions world?
So that's a great, great question. So throughout, you know, my career, I basically started with property management, managed all different types of properties, commercial, industrial, residential, and you start building your knowledge base basically. And eventually, you know, as you move up, you know, the acquisition people tap into you in terms of your property management knowledge, because obviously it's a huge aspect of, you know, of buying a property. You need to know how you're going to be able to execute whatever plan you're putting down in your spreadsheet, right? So you need, you know, walking the properties, I was always tapped for that, you know? And then at a certain point, I pivoted to acquisition work, but the way I viewed it is I tried to look at it at a different lens. I looked at acquisitions from a lens of a property manager, meaning I know what it takes to run a property and how to make it successful and how to execute a plan. And maybe there's certain things that someone who's just involved with acquisitions is not going to see in a deal because they haven't actually run it themselves per se. You know, a lot of times acquisition people spend a lot of time in the office behind spreadsheets and not as much time in the field.
And I'm stopping you, but let me ask you, I want to focus on that for a second. You're saying, okay, so I saw in the field and then I went to the spreadsheets, et cetera. But that is exactly what we call the property management to asset management level. So when, you know, let me ask you this specifically, how do you run, meaning go from the property management, from the guy who is an intern, who's running, asking, you know, actual questions on the ground, to come to the spreadsheets, to get to the asset management level? How did that happen before you got to the acquisitions? Because that's question. What, obviously, that's what you're saying. That's what got you the acquisitions.
Right. No, 100%. Listen, clearly when you're more experienced in one specific thing, it's natural to grow in that specific area. Right. But as I was saying, you know, when I moved from company to company and grew within specific companies, you have more responsibility. So let's say initially I started out with a property or two. Then you get a portfolio of properties, right? And eventually what I ended up doing is I ran, I ran the entire New York division of operations, right? And when you do that, you're dealing with investors, all of the acquisitions guys are leaning on you for the real, what's really going on at the properties. And you get much more involved in asset management, which really, really, helps you pivot into acquisitions. You know, it's the same language, just looking at things a little differently, because you see how it was budgeted, how it was underwritten when you're doing the asset management. And so I was able to, you know, as things progressed, pivot that way. Slowly but surely, as my responsibilities grew, you know, I was able to touch more areas of real estate and become a more rounded, well-rounded overall, I guess the way I thought about real estate became more well-rounded.
Tell me something. So you got to this point, but, discussing what you said in the beginning, that you actually had this privilege to touch residential, retail, probably commercial type, you know, could you go through the asset classes that you went, you know, that you had to learn? And the processes that you, the knowledge base is so different, obviously. I always tell people, multifamily, then goes retail, office, then goes retail, then goes hotels, et cetera. Meaning in terms of knowledge base, a level of knowledge that you have to have. Could you go through what you went through in order to get this knowledge base in each asset class and how you moved from asset class to asset class?
It's a great question. So I started in multifamily. And, you know, obviously, as things go along, every day is different. Every situation is different. Even now, anyone who's in real estate can tell you that every day is a new set of problems, a new set of issues, a new set of solutions. Right. That's actually why I love real estate so much. It's never the same. It's always different. It's never just, you can't, it's never just like a machine. You know, it's everything is different. So, you know, I worked in residential for, let's say, 3 or 4 years. And then what ended up happening is when I was with Kushner, actually, You know, there was a point in, where they sold a very large portion of their residential portfolio. And I was actually pivoted from residential to some of their commercial portfolio after that. And when that happened, so yes, I had the base knowledge of property management, but of course, commercial and industrial and retail are very different than residential. So with the core knowledge of property management in general, I obviously had to learn, you know, the other things you need to know for those specific asset classes. So whether it's, you know, learning how to read a commercial lease, which is very different than a residential lease or a retail lease, or, you know, the different type, you know, triple net, gross, you know, CAM, all these different things that are not in residential, you know, I needed to pick up. And over time, obviously, you know, you add that. And then, you know, maybe you're shifted to a different property that's you know, a different type of residential property, whether it be, you know, affordable housing or luxury. You know, just throughout my career, it just naturally kind of worked where every position I was in, I was kind of, everything was a little different. And then you just eventually, once again, there's like a core knowledge of property management in general, but every property is different and all the different asset classes are different and all the different asset types are different. But, you know, as I moved along, I was thrown different properties and, you know, had to learn how to, you know, run that.
So tell me, for example, let's, you know, let's just talk about that. Let's say you all of a sudden bump into a retail. Okay. I'm just trying, meaning to me, it's pretty obvious, but I'm saying some people who are listening are probably asking themselves, okay, what's so different? So let's say until now you got experience with multifamily, you went to class A and to affordable housing, beautiful, you moved to office, but all of a sudden you bump into retail. And you're like, you know, your bosses are telling you, okay, that's the acquisitions that we're going after right now. Get it done, analyze it, underwrite it.
Right.
So office obviously is different from multifamily, but now you're moving to retail. All of a sudden, boom, what happens to Jamie, how he deals with it, and what type of information is being thrown in his face?
Right. So retail, you know, listen, with multifamily, you have lots of different apartments. If you have turnover in a multifamily property, it is less of a big deal in terms of like unexpected turnover. It may actually possibly be a positive thing if you're looking to do value add work. When that happens with retail, it could destroy your entire budget. So like, for example, let's say you have a company that goes out of business, is falling on hard times on a retail property, and they have, you know, a third of the property, that specific thing. And obviously then moving out would be a huge, huge thing. So it's important when you're underwriting a retail property to understand, first of all, when the lease expirations are, you know, who your tenants are, you know, what the leases are like, you know, every commercial lease is completely different. And there's a lot of nuance.
Oh, tenancies, yeah.
Yeah, you need to really go through all them with a fine tooth comb and understand what the situation is, you know, and, you know, do they have any renewals? Are there any specific, you know, is there a percentage rent that's being shared? You know, who's responsible for what? You know, it's a completely different way of looking at it. Also with multifamily, you know, people always need a place to live. But in this, you know, in retail, you got to make sure it's, it's a place where people want to shop. The area is safe, you know. You know, that type of information.
For sure. Tell me something. You moved through so many things and you've seen so many markets. Let's talk a little bit about residential, you know, and then we'll talk about other things because you were involved in so many asset classes, but let's talk about the market. We all know what happened through COVID. We all know what happened through COVID. But, you know, coming out of COVID right now, and hopefully we are coming out of COVID because, you know, we see all these things that are going on, but we both, you know, everybody's is really praying the best they can in order to see it behind us. So what is really happening to the market now from a residential perspective? What do you think?
Well, I mean, the market is crazy hot now. It's a seller's market. I think there was a lot of money, and there is a lot of money out there, and there's a lot of institutional players out there, which makes it very, very hard. I mean, these properties are going for crazy cap rates, and it's not only in the gateway markets now. It's everywhere. It's not only in big cities. Even if you go to tertiary markets or secondary markets, the cap rates are like beyond. And I can tell you, 3 years ago, I was looking at properties, looking at these cap rates, and I'm thinking, okay, it's got to go, the cap rates have to go up at some point. Something's got to happen. It's crazy now. And here we are 3 years later. If I would have bought back then, or what I did buy, it's great in terms of the way we underwrote, right? You underwrite, the cap rates have just gone down. So what you need to do in order to buy a property now, you need to either a few things. Number one, you need to be looking at it differently than everyone else is in order to make your numbers work, right? You need to be coming up with some aspect of it that no one else is seeing. And this way you're able to underwrite in a way where the purchase price makes sense for you and people can't compete with that.
There has Another to be some value add game.
Right, a value add game, but everyone's doing value add. So you need to, it's value add with a twist. It's something that people are not realizing, whether it's how you implement it. You have a strategy to implement it that'll end up saving you money or bumping the rents more. That's one aspect of it.
Can you give us like an example of an idea with the twist? Obviously, right. every deal is different, but something.
Yeah, for sure. Like, for example, if you renovate a few units at a building, right? If you renovate a few units in a building and let's say you want to, you want to renovate the whole property. So what can you do with these new units that you renovated, right? You could either put them on the market, bump the rents $150, whatever you're going to do, and rent them to new tenants, right? That's what most people would think, right? But what may be a good idea? What may be a strategy that is a little bit out of the box? Maybe you offer to transfer some of your current tenants who already pay the rent. They're familiar with you. They'd be happy with the better unit, right? Willing to pay the rent. And then what do? You get another empty unit that you could then go ahead and renovate and do the same thing. You increase the amount of units that you're able to apply your value add strategy to, but at the same time, you're able to, fill up these units with people who are paying more rent. That's nice just twist. One example.
Yeah.
That you have additional income. There's so much, especially in these value add deals, you have to just look at opportunities on additional income. A lot of times, the previous landlord hasn't really explored all the options. Maybe they're not charging for rubs or not charging for rubs in the best way that they can. Or maybe there's another amenity that people would be happy to pay that no one else considered. Maybe it's dropping in a fitness center, pre-mod fitness center, in a way that people thought it couldn't be done before. And then you could add, charge an amenity fee. You have to look very carefully and think out of the box in this market. I think that's what you need to do.
And tell me something first of all, thank you for that. That's a great, meaning a few great nuggets here. Here's a question. Obviously we know locations are different one another, especially today, post-pandemic New York is not pre-pandemic in New York City, especially in New York City, but there are some voices and noises today that New York City is coming back. Obviously, within the tri-state area, and I'm talking about New York now, I'm going to talk about the rest of the country in a second, but let's focus on New York for a second, because you're familiar with that market. So the question is, in terms of the differences between the areas within the tri-state areas, however, let's focus for a second on New York City specifically, because some people say that it's coming back. Is it really coming back? Well, just 2 months ago, 3 months ago, we spoke about valuations are going to crash. Things are going to happen. Forbearance is going to end. Where are we today, in your opinion?
Listen, there's no question that it's a little tough now in New York. There's a lot of, I've run buildings in New York for a while. New York City, running buildings in New York City and running buildings anywhere else in America, in my opinion, are completely different. It's like a whole other animal. There's laws and regulations that you need to understand really, really well when buying and when running a property in New York. I think, listen, New York is a great place. And I think in the future, things will go up again. So as long as you understand, you know, what you're buying and how you're buying it and what the plan is in terms of how long you plan on holding it and whatnot, I think there is still opportunity in New York a lot. And I think it will in the future go up. It's just, you know, you just have to be very careful and really, really understand what you're getting yourself into and what the plan is and know how to execute it properly. That's what I think.
So, okay. So without having, I know you forgot your crystal ball. Okay. Mm-hmm. And your profit certificate is not with you right now. Mm-hmm. But having said that, what do you think is happening within the year from now in the New York area?
It depends a lot. You know, it shouldn't be like this, but you know, in New York, a lot of the political stuff, which you know, don't want to get into, but dictates how landlords are viewed and you know, how much they're able to move and how much they're able to do, and you know, the general feel in the market. So it's unclear, in my opinion, where we are a year from now. But I think there's a lot of outside factors that will move the direction of that market. But I really think if things open up there, it could open up in a big way, which means that the opportunity may be now, but you just have to understand, you may have to hold it for a bit before executing on what you want to do, or, you know, and you have to just hedge your risks and make sure you're properly looking at everything.
So, right. And now we're talking about the rest of the country. We saw everybody running away from the big cities, right? We saw everybody running away from the New Yorks, from the Californias, from Los Angeles, from San Francisco, et cetera, et cetera. We know, we saw that. Everybody's going to Nashville, going to Idaho, going to Texas, going, et cetera. Florida, of course, everybody's running to Florida. We know about all that. But that creates pockets of things to be overpriced, overheated, overvalued. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, it is very overheated everywhere. This is what I was saying before. So either you have to find a unique way to look at a property, or obviously you have to hit the phones and hit the street, honestly, and find an off-market deal. Meaning there's two ways to handle it, right? You could handle it in a way where everyone's looking at the same deal, but you're seeing something that not everyone else is seeing, or you could, you know, make your money on the purchase price by just finding an off-market deal that people don't know about yet. And you could, you know, instead of negotiating against 100 people, you're negotiating against 3 people, or maybe it's just you even, if you could, find something like that. In addition, in this market, you need to come to the table with something unique that's going to put you ahead of everything else, whether that's a personal relationship, meaning, maybe it's a situation where you have, maybe it's inherited by someone and they don't really know what they're doing in terms of real estate, and they want the legacy of the family to be upheld and being in terms of taking care of the tenants. So maybe, you know, your personal relationship with that person may be better, and that may put you ahead. Or being able to go with a lot of hard money, being able to act quickly, that's also something that can put you, that can put you ahead of some others bidding on the same deal.
For sure. And you know what? Let's move for a second to office. This is one of the most mind-boggling asset classes that right now, you know, everybody knows the discussion of everybody, you know, people move to homes, obviously those who got out of the big cities and bought a big house, whether it's Long Island or they just moved all the way to, who knows, Boise, Idaho. You know, they moved because they can actually work from home and they realized we can do it. It's easier. It's much more affordable. Quality of life is much higher. Very nice. But when it comes to office, office is being affected by all these moves. And we know what's going on now, but nobody knows what will go on in the future. Office got hit, not in a way like hotels for sure went to zero, or retail 70%, you know, was killed by 70 up to in some places up to 70% from the revenues that we're supposed to get to come to retail. But office was not there. Office was somewhere in the middle, but was still hurt. They still got hit. What do you think about it? Where are we going with office?
So it's a good question. So office is tricky because obviously a lot of people are working remote now. But I think even now you're starting to see, although maybe people aren't going 100% back to the office every day a week, I think a lot of companies are instituting where you're going to be there a few days a week. Maybe they won't need as much space as they needed before, but I still think there's a big market for office. I think it's going to come back, honestly. And I could tell you, I mean, personally also, I mean, being away from the office, yes, it has its pluses, but also has its minuses. I mean, being able to work with a team, being present there is there's a value to that. And also, it depends on the person. I'm sure a lot of people are less efficient at home and would be happy to come to the office and, you know, be completely focused on what they're doing instead of being partially focused, but there's other stuff going on in the background where, you know what I mean? So I think office is coming 100%. Back also. You just have to, once again, be careful and make sure you underwrite the deals properly in a way that you hedge your risks, you know?
For sure. So moving from that, let's talk a little bit about retail, which is one of the biggest talks today. And to talk to a guy who does acquisitions and has so much experience with every asset class pretty much, but dealt with retail. And today retail is out there with a big question. And I had actually, I think that you saw, you know, my interview with Shlomo Chap also about the new retail, the new types and et cetera. And, correlating it with industrial, some people say it's overheated also, and still many people are running after industrial. Can you talk about this whole e-commerce revolution, how it affects retail? Yeah. In terms of the tenant mix, in terms of their locations, in terms of the types of revenues, the types of businesses that will be opened or not, what are we looking at?
So first of all, you need to be careful what your tenant mix is. You got to make sure, in my opinion, that you have a nice mix where it's not one specific area of retail where if something changes in that market or they go under because of e-commerce, your whole property sinks. Listen, there are a lot of companies that are using e-commerce to their advantage, but are still able to maintain, a physical presence. Like, for example, I was at I needed to get some sporting goods, right? You can't order that. You have to try on the hockey gloves, the helmet, the baseball mitt. You got to feel it in your hands. You can't order that stuff online. But in addition, this specific store we went to, they had that curbside pickup. If you want to order online, they integrated it within their physical store so that they don't lose that market per se if you want to order online. But for everyone like me who wants to go into the store and actually touch and feel what I'm buying, because for this specific thing, it's Walmart does the same thing, right? You know, they have a physical presence, but they're also huge online. And, you have to just pick the right, make sure your tenant mix is the right mix and companies that you are confident are going to survive given today's, e-commerce environment. And, and you just have to be careful with who your tenants are and do a lot of research and check out the leases and.
And industrial within that conversation.
So industrial warehouses, there's so much demand for that now. I mean, it goes along with what we were saying before. E-commerce, right? Amazon, all these companies that are doing a lot of doing a lot of business online, they need to keep their stuff somewhere, right? So warehouse and industrial stuff is sort of, it's crazy. There's a lot of interesting opportunities in that specific asset type. It's a lot. And what's good about that also, it doesn't have to be specifically right in a specific market to be on the outskirts. You just have to understand, what highways are near there, how all the goods are getting from one place to another. And you have to understand the location in that sense, right? Because that's what you need for that type of asset,
For sure. I want to shift gears a little bit towards what you do right now. the company that you work with right now, if you could talk a little bit about what you guys do, because it sounds a little bit like prop tech, property technology, which I'm heavily involved in, and in many, many ways. How'd you get into this? Because, you know, I always love to ask people who are in real estate, because for us, moving towards technology, especially real estate people, is like, it's like, you know, a guy going to the woods, you know, what's going on out there? How was that for you personally? And tell us a little bit about your experiences.
Right. So it was great, actually. So being in real estate, and you know this also, real estate has moved a little bit slower than the rest of the planet in terms of technology. And yes, for some reason, it seems to always be like that in real estate. So just now, you know, finally, the industry is starting to be more open-minded about technology in every aspect, you name it, whether it's finding the property, running the property, the accounting, the investors, so many different ways, leasing, you know. And so basically, I've always been interested in technology, as I said at the beginning, that's literally what I went to school for. and real estate, I love real estate, and I know real estate, and specifically this company, what we have is a solution for GPs who are dealing with lots of investors. And being in the industry, I've literally been on the other side. I felt the need for why we need something like this, because I've been the guy who every quarter, all of my investors call me. No one knows how much money they have invested in what property, how much money they had, what they made last. And you have to go search for all this. You're fielding all these calls, all the while trying to get out the distributions and the reporting. And with a solution such as ours, you basically have everything at your fingertips. The investors have a transparent view of everything that's going on. All they have to do is log in and they see exactly where they stand. So they don't need to call you every 3 months. They see exactly what's going on. And in terms of what you need to do on the reporting and the distribution side, we like, you know, it cuts the work in half, and it's really very efficient. There's less room for error, which, you know, when you send out distributions, how many times do you check the spreadsheet and review it again and again and again, because you don't want $1 million to go to the wrong person. So, you know, our software, you know, cuts down on that, you know, repetitiveness in order to make sure you're not making a mistake. It really makes it a lot easier. And it actually, in terms of how I got involved, the opportunity fell in my lap. I was approached by one of the investors for this company who knew my background. And basically, I dipped my toe in the water for a little bit just to see what it was about. And really, it's a great company, an amazing solution, and there's such a need out there. And there's so many people in the industry, huge companies and small companies, that do stuff old fashioned, you know, the way, you know, with the spreadsheets and you know, just do it manually when there's a solution out there that could just help streamline everything and make it much more efficient. So that's it. And also, I get to talk to people about real estate all day. I mean, I speak to
amazing
everyone. It's great. I love it.
It's amazing how things are evolving in this industry. It's just unreal. It's just mind-boggling. And you know what? Seeing this evolution that happened to this business, it's unreal. You know, just, I would say 5 years ago, it was like Stone Age comparing to what's going on today, right? It's just amazing. It's amazing. Tell me something. Let's talk a little bit about what you could give in terms of advice, a few tips for people who are starting up and they want to go through this career path. And a person is coming out of school. He did not go to NYU Shack, because that's like a natural thing. They are pow. They go to Kushner today, will grab him, and these guys will grab him. Not necessarily, but they'll go to Blackstone, to this company, that company. A guy went to school, came out, did not learn anything about real estate, maybe finance, maybe business. But real estate is a different animal, as we all know, and they always require some type of knowledge base. What would you suggest to a newcomer?
It's a great question. I've actually been asked this a bunch, because, I mean, people always ask, you know, how do I get into the industry?
Meaning, I always tell them, just take my course. I have a course for beginners. But regardless, I'm asking the guy with experience, you know, who actually went through it, what is your take? Because you can't have two people saying the same thing. So I want to hear your take.
Right. So number one is you need to educate yourself. You know, there's so much out there, like you just mentioned. There's so much out there. You have to just continuously be learning, whether it's online courses or coaching or reading articles on, you know, on real estate websites, and just understand, you know, start inhaling all the information about what's going on there so you have a base. And in terms of getting in, you're going to have to start at the bottom. That's the way it works. You know, you go in, maybe you're an intern somewhere, or maybe you're an assistant 100%. Property manager, or maybe you're a leasing person. Listen, I got to tell you, when I started, and this is great, actually, they had a training program where I actually spent a month with the super. I spent a few months with the leasing person. And then with an assistant property manager. And I can't tell you how much it helped me in property management, just being around all different aspects, all the people that I would eventually have to lean on and communicate with, because you understand what it's like to be in their shoes, and it just makes the relationship much better. And you just understand, you know, what it takes to get the job done. And also for anyone looking to get in, that's how you just absorb the knowledge, right? By being a leasing agent, you're going to learn other aspects just by being there. And you'll be able to, and once you can, you know, build your knowledge base and prove that, you know, that you're a hard worker and you ask a lot of questions, you need to ask a lot of questions, always ask questions. And if people are not willing to answer the questions, make sure to go to another place where people are willing to answer the questions, because that's the only way that you learn. Never be afraid to ask questions. This is an industry that you can't learn in a textbook. You have to be thrown in there and learn from the people who have been doing it. And that's how you do it.
Right. Having said that, it's not, you know, you don't learn from a textbook. We still read books. So which book or which couple of books would you recommend for anyone who is coming in, who is already in that actually, you know, because I'm sure you're also one of those guys, takes one to know one, as we call it, that is trying to always educate themselves. We always try to upgrade ourselves to get more knowledge. I, for example, I'm like reading forever this book that is as thick as I don't know what. It's like frustrating. I'm just not getting to the end of it. But it's about the planning and development of resorts. I actually started pre-pandemic, once the pandemic hit, because resorts went down. I just got, it's depressing reading that kind of a book. And now I'm reading it again. But what is your take, beginning and middle, whatever?
So I actually, for me specifically, just specifically now, where there's so much going on, I'm sure you're crazy busy also. Yeah. I find it very hard to read.
Yes, it is.
Books. I read a few pages. But and then, you know,
3 years back, 4 years back, five.
No, I'm saying no. So what I would say is I would educate myself by reading articles about what's going on now, researching online, listening to podcasts, as many podcasts as you can, on topics that you're interested in. And that, in addition to being in the industry, you'll help grow your knowledge base, which will help propel you, I think, down this path. That's my opinion.
You know what you say is so amazing. I'll tell you why. Because, for example, this podcast, okay? And I'm not saying just mine. It's millions of others, much more veteran podcasts. But let's say this one that we just did right now, okay? People are listening now. So for those who are interested in the market, they just heard a good perspective from a guy who is in the market, who ran all kind of things, did underwriting, was involved in property management, asset management, so on and so forth, right? However, think about this beginner guy, okay, who is listening to us for the first time, is just right now listening to these words. And for them, they found it exciting. They found it, elevating. But there were those little terms in the middle that you threw and they didn't know. Now, you guys that are listening, this is your time to actually take notes of the stuff you didn't understand. All you have to do is the stuff that did not exist when I was getting in, or when Jamie did not get in, and that's Google. You just have to Google it and you will find the answer. And that is it. And that is easy as it gets. But it's a process. You have to take it one thing at a time.
Yeah, no, 100%. Like I used to, I remember specifically when I was an intern, like I told you, and also every meeting and you know, every meeting that I've ever been to, especially you always got to bring a notepad. And if there, and if it's an industry or, you know, if you're early on a specific asset class, whatever it may be, you got to take notes, write down every single term you don't understand, every acronym that you've never heard of. And then now that you have Google, which is great, you just Google it, but speak to someone who's experienced and learn right. about them and learn about it. And that's how you grow your knowledge. And once you grow your knowledge, you know, then, you know, you could grow in the industry.
Jamie, what can I tell you? This was really fun. And thank you so, so much for being with us in this show. If you could tell everybody how they could find you guys.
Oh, absolutely.
So, we're obviously leaving all that. You know, you guys check out the, you know, all these links up there, down there. But Jamie, tell us.
just our website is agorareal.com. So check us out there and feel free to reach out to me. I mean, I love talking to people and I'm happy to chat real estate and tell you about our software to see if it's something that could help you.
Beautiful. Jamie, thank you so much. And you guys take care of yourselves. And as you heard, you have to educate yourself. And for you guys who are veterans, I hope you guys enjoyed this show. I'll see you in the next show. Take care of yourselves. Hey guys, thanks for joining me in this CRE Shark Eye show. I hope you enjoyed it. And go subscribe, download, do whatever you guys need to do. And I'll see you in the next episode. Take care of yourselves.